Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From newsounds.org, this is the Soundcheck Podcast. If this episode of Soundcheck smells funny, it's because it's old. In fact, it's from 2015. But at least it still sounds good. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. And here's why I love Dan Deacon's music. I mean, listen to this song called When I Was Done Dying. It's from Dan's brand new album called Gliss Riffer, and it breaks all of the rules of electronic dance music. I mean, where's the four on the floor beat? This song seems to be in 6/8 time. And are those African thumb pianos underneath it all? Don't get me wrong, you can still dance to the songs on Gliss Riffer. And if you see Dan Deacon live, dancing is pretty much a foregone conclusion. Today, we'll give you a chance to hear Dan Deacon live, playing some of his new songs here in the Soundcheck studio. This first one is called Learning to Relax.
Fire.
That is Dan Deacon, live on Soundcheck, with a song called Learning to Relax. I'm really glad we're shooting video of this session, because the difference between what you just heard and what we actually are seeing in the studio is pretty remarkable. Dan Deacon, behind his rack of very, very colorful little, I would normally call them black boxes, but they're every other color under the rainbow, very fluorescent looking. And Dan, you're kind of fluorescent looking yourself now. The blood's been pumping, the face is flushed.
To keep all the blood in my face, just in case I need it.
Learning to Relax is the name of that. I know you're a big fan of the contemporary classical composer Steve Reich, mm-hmm. and that's one of the pieces on this new record where if you're listening for it, you can hear...
Oh, definitely.
And there's also an interesting thing you were doing where you almost look like an Indian tabla player. You know how tabla players use the palm and then the heel of the hand to make different sounds on the drum? What was that you were doing? It was seemed to be controlling a voice thing.
It's the pitch shift pedal. I used to use the hardware one. I'm really spinning around in this chair like a
psychopath. You're making me seasick. I'll need to stop.
all right, I'll do my best. I started switching everything that I do to MIDI rather than just using hardware because I was destroying all the hardware and I kept being like, why am I buying the same $250 pedal and burning it out every 3 months? Doesn't make any sense. So I started switching
MIDI,
everything.
MIDI is the digital interface that allows you to control that pedal without actually breaking the pedal.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I like to play the throttle because it's designed for feet. So you can really like ram it back and forth and, I don't know, play different patterns on it. It's very different from like a fader or a pot or anything like that.
Right, so. Right. It's interesting, this new
album... I got to catch my breath for a minute, I'm sorry.
Well, one of the reasons you have to catch your breath is because you do a lot more singing on Gliss Riffer than we've heard, you know, in the last couple of records. Mm-hmm. As you probably know, you know, neuroscientists have determined that we listen to music differently when there's a human voice.
Really? No, I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
I mean, I figured.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's why I added voice in the first place when I first started performing, because I hated going to laptop concerts. I kept thinking, like, I find this boring. I mean, I'm not, like, the most learned person about music, but I do know anything. And I kept being like, if I didn't know anything about music, this would be the most boring thing to be like, come watch me do this. And I kept thinking about the physicality of sound. You can know nothing about music. You don't have to. I mean, obviously, you want music to be something that you don't need to have an education to enjoy. But, like, when a hand holds something and then strikes a drum... You know how that sound happens, and it instantly becomes relatable. But no, I had no idea that the voice made it like... Oh, and that's why I started using the voice, because I can't play the drums and I can't sing. So I started using the voice because I can't sing. But I could process my voice. And even though... So I was... When I first started, I was mainly making like noise music. Even though it didn't come out sounding like a voice, people knew when I like held the mic up and I opened my mouth, sounds happened.
Right.
And it instantly made, I think, it more connectable.
Right. Well, which is what neuroscience tells us, is that there's a part of our brain that kind of recognizes the sound of another human voice and zeroes in on it.
Interesting.
Which is why Muzak is always instrumental.
Really?
They don't want that voice kind of distracting you by attracting you, if that makes any sense.
It does. I often hate when I go somewhere and there's vocal music playing, because normally the vocals are mixed a little hot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, if I'm in like a loud restaurant, the last thing I want to hear is like just someone else being like, why? Why? You know, like, I don't need that screaming over me. I know, because all pop music is just someone screaming why and like asking me a series of questions.
So for this album, was this kind of a reaction to, a number of other projects that you've been doing that's gotten you further and further away from the voice and the electronics? Was this a paring back?
No, I think the reason I focused on the voice is because I thought I had like permanently destroyed it. I did. There was a venue in New York called 285 Kent.
Right.
And I was sick. Now sadly gone. And I had a sore throat and I did the show anyway and I didn't warm up and people were smoking inside. And it was just like a perfect storm for like a terrible worsening of the throat. And then I flew the next day, also made it worse. And I did another show and then I did a talk. And it was just like, after that, like it just hurt real bad for a long time. And then I'd just gotten health insurance, thanks Obama. Although I did just lose it again. But anyway, so I went to a throat doctor and they were like, well, you didn't do any permanent damage, but like you have to realize that you can't treat your voice like your shoes. Like you have to treat it well and you have to know how to use it. And I was like, I have no idea how to use my voice. That's insane. So I just kept thinking I should utilize this expiring instrument before it's expired. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. So using it in various ways because it's being processed, it's being filtered. At times it's even being kind of pitch shifted.
Oh, definitely. I've always been fascinated with how far you can take a human voice before it stops being heard as a voice.
But that's where you get into some really unusual gray areas when the voice has been processed to the point where the brain is not sure what it's hearing. Is that a voice or not?
I never thought about it that way.
That's really a very curious place to be making music and for us as listeners to be listening to music.
We should have these conversations before I make the next record. I feel like I'm like, oh, that's a really good point. Thanks for us. I think in a weird way you're saying like I'm doing something cool. Maybe I'll do a little more.
Yeah. What about, you know, the instruments? I had heard that you had gone down to Asheville to the Moog place where the late Robert Moog and all of his instruments were, and were playing around with one of the prototypes. Is that on this record?
It is. It was actually on the last track pretty extensively. They had a new synth called the Sub 37 that wasn't out yet. It didn't have a manual. It was still beta testing, so it was really fun to like be like, can it do this? And they're like, I think so. And then like trying to figure out how to do
see.
It.
Well, let's see, yeah. Now, you're going to do a little improv on the synth for us. What are you using here?
I'm going to use some MIDI controllers to control a soft synth in Ableton. I think it's going to be the quote-unquote analog synth in that software.
Okay.
But
so when you say it's an improv, do you have pre-recorded kind of seed materials that you spin off of, or are you just going to make the whole thing up here?
No, we'll just make the whole thing up. I'll have some MIDI filters making sure that like I stay within certain parameters. But there's a good chance this could be a nightmare. We'll find out real soon.
All right, let's hear it. Looking forward to it. Dan Deacon is with us once again in the Soundcheck studio playing live. His new album, brand new, is called Gliss Riffer. It is out. We've already heard one track from it. We'll be hearing another shortly. But for the moment, here's a live synth improvisation from Dan Deacon. Thank you. Dan Deacon with a little bit of synthesizer improvisation here in the Soundcheck studio. Dan Deacon's latest CD is called Gliss Riffer. It is brand new, and aside from that improv, he's playing some songs from that for us here in the Soundcheck studio. That improv, there are lots of moments there that remind me of the early keyboard improvs of Terry Riley.
Oh, yeah. I feel like I need to purge myself of being so much like, oh, this sounds great. I wonder, this sounds a lot like Terry Riley, but I just like it so much, I'm going to keep doing it. I just really love the pentatonic scale.
Yeah.
And I feel like when you layer enough of a pentatonic scale on top of itself, Terry starts to like crawl out and be like, what are you doing? Didn't you know I did this in like the 70s? What's wrong with you? But I'm like, go back to sleep, Terry. I'm just having so much fun.
The man who wrote NC and started the musical movement known as minimalism, and to whom The Who dedicated their song Baba O'Reilly.
I'm glad you
after Terry Riley
are corroborating that, because I've said that many times. People are like, no way, that's just some garbage.
Absolutely the case.
Cool, I thought so too.
So for you, the act of making a record and the act of making a live show are mm-hmm. two different things, right?
Oh yeah, definitely.
So what's the experience like making a record? It's got to be kind of unusual for someone who's such a visceral live performer.
Well, whenever I'm writing, and I think this is before the process of making a record, but whenever I'm writing anything, I wonder about where it's going to go, what its future will be. Will it be something I play live? Will it be something that exists on an album? Will it be something that I play in a seated area or in a concert hall or
right.
in a venue? Will it be something that I'll save for to be paired to image, like for film or video? Will it be something that I make and don't know what to do with and don't do anything with?
Hmm.
And once I sort of figure out where it's going to go, it starts to grow into that mold. Do you know what I mean? Like, once I realize, like, oh, this will be on a record and I will play it live, I start thinking about it. I'm like, well, how much percussion should there be? How much density do I want to save? How will this sound through a PA system? If this is just going to be heard by people in their homes, where's it going to go? Is this going to be a piece that's like exclusively on a record? And if it's exclusively on a record, where in the record will it fall? What context will it be surrounded by? Is it going to be an outlier on an album, or is it going to be something that like is a segue that makes sense? Does that make any sense?
Yeah. And at what point, I mean, I wouldn't otherwise ask this question, but given the kind of process you just told us about, it seems to be apropos. At what point do you put a title to these things, and then what happens to it?
Well, titles either come very early on or very late in the game. Like Take It to the Max, that has been the title since I like made a session for that, and I think 2008 is when I just started it. Some of the original like sketches made it into there, but I should have probably retitled it, but I was just like, I'll take it to the max, all right? That sounds good.
So the record is called Gliss Riffer. Are you, in fact, riffing on the idea of the glissando, the swoop and the glide?
Well, I do love these cascading melodies. Like the synth I was playing is really just, it's taking MIDI CC commands and turning them into notes. So it's just these mm-hmm. continuous up and down motions running through a scale filter. When I first started playing, I had just an oscillator that only glissed, didn't have any. It was just a pure sine generator.
Right. If you wanted to go from C to D, it went.
Oh yeah.
Whoop, it didn't go boop boop.
No,
you didn't have discrete notes.
I wasn't. Yeah. I was not going to C or D. I was going up and down. That was it.
So where are you? What are you listening to these days? What's turning you on?
Well, I really love Spotify.
Mm-hmm. All of it.
I love it. If it's on Spotify, I love it. I don't care what it is. Show tunes, demo tapes, I don't care. You can just break a stick and record that and put it on Spotify. Playlist, here we go. No, I like Spotify because I've spent so much money on CDs, and now I don't have a CD player. Like, my computers don't have CD players. My stereo is a tape deck and a record player. And I'm staring at these piles of, like,
old Load Records CDs or Boredom CDs, and I was like, I don't want to buy these again. And so I have this Esquivel CD, and I bought it, I don't know, when I was in like 11th grade. And when I got on Spotify, I was like, I don't know, what am I going to listen to? And how is this any different? And then I found Esquivel, and I was like, oh yeah, Esquivel's on here. And so is Les Paul. And so is all this other weird crap. So I feel like I've been listening to a lot of music from my past, but also like listening to a lot of music. And the thing I also like about Spotify are the people who aren't on it, because that makes me want to listen to them even more. Like Holly Herndon's not on it. And I'll be like, ooh, Holly Herndon, why did you not join Spotify? I'm going to have to actually go out and get your record now. And it works. But I also just like, music is constantly changed. The way you heard it, the way you made it, the way it interacted with society and society interacted with it. So I don't think there are wrong turns.
Yeah.
I know it's like this like naive arrogance to think that we're like living in a time right before a new art form emerges. Like I keep thinking like how exciting it must have been to be like, no, this isn't a little painting. This is a photograph made by a machine called a camera.
Mm.
Not that we don't live through that now, but there's not a lot of magic in technology. Like you can tell someone like, oh, I have a 3D printer that prints human skin. They'll be like, does it print eyeballs? You know what I mean? Like it's impossible to like...
to wow anybody?
Exactly. Do you know what I mean? Because like the moment it comes out, they're like, well, I'm going to wait till the next one because it prints eyeballs. So I keep thinking like, we have new technologies, and I do think we're on the cusp of something that is not music. It's a new form of art. The same way that like net art didn't exist before the internet, and now we're finally starting to see, you know, artists like Dina Kelberman or something that are creating internet-based art that could only be based on the internet. And I'm not saying a new music that's based on the internet. I'm saying something that's like, there was a time before poetry. Do you know what I mean? And then someone was like, I think I wrote a poem. Do you know what I mean? And I keep thinking that like, in 10 years, I'm going to hear about some like 25-year-old kid that's invented a new way to make art with sound that isn't sound art or music. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
does that make any sense?
Yeah.
And I find that to be inspiring.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know what you asked me to make me think.
That was so long ago and so many left turns ago.
Coffee here is real
I'm
good.
Happy to follow you wherever you're going. Dan Deacon with us here in the Soundcheck studio. You're going to wrap things up with Feel the Lightning, which is the opening track on the record. And this is the one, Dan, where everyone thinks there's a woman singing.
That is true.
But it's you through this pitch-shifting device.
It's actually not that pitch-shifting device. This was the first record where I wanted to use a different technique to augment the pitch of my voice. I use an old Les Paul technique that the Beatles used a lot too called Verispeed. I use a lot on the player piano on this record too to get these different layered piano sounds. But you change the speed of the music and you sing regularly and then speed it up or slow it down. So then it augments the pitch of your voice. But if you do it within a slight range, it doesn't sound like the Chipmunks or like, what's up? You know, it sounds
right, like Darth Vader. Yeah.
Exactly. It sounds like an unnatural natural. And that's sort of, so I wanted a different technique with this. I also just trying to think like, it's after years of pitch shifting, I know I have like a different way of thinking about it, but I don't hear sounds as gendered. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just I knew it was my own voice. I was like, well, I'm not doing like a female voice. I'm just singing with a higher pitched voice. The same way that like the left hand on a piano isn't the boy and the right hand isn't the girl. Do you know what I mean?
Like,
does that make any sense?
So you're singing soprano here.
I guess so. Maybe it's because my partner studies human sexuality and I'm trying to be more 2015 about these gender politics. But does that make any sense?
Yeah, absolutely. You want to play it for us?
Yes, I do.
Dan Deacon is my guest here in the Soundcheck studio. Brand new album out. It's called Gliss Riffer. And here is the lead-off track called Feel the Lightning, live on Soundcheck. We'll be right back.
Lightning is the name of the song. It's from Dan Deacon, a live performance here in the Soundcheck studio. That track also opens his brand new album called Gliss Riffer. And you're heading out to tour this, so that'll be another experience entirely, I'm sure.
It will be. I'm in the process of trying to redo the stage show. The same way that I feel like I've found my voice or being like, right. I can... Like, I've never thought about lyrics. Like, if you think about, like, I could think about sound as, like, every sound as, like, this is my voice in my head. It's like every sound is like pitch and duration and amplitude and texture. I want to use all of them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I'm like, but the voice has the ability to convey direct content through lyrics. Why have I been ignoring lyrics? It's been like I guess I largely ignore amplitude. So let's get real. Everything's kind of like double forte the whole time. But I've slowly been like, you know, when I go into a performance environment, I like to think like, well, what? The whole venue is the performance space, and the audience are just as much the performers as I am. I'd rather people watch themselves than watch me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Well, but those people who do choose to watch you, Dan Deacon, are often given quite a show.
Why, thank you very
much.
Given
quite an eyeful. Dan's been giving us an earful here in the Soundcheck studio today. Great to have you back.
Oh, thanks, it's great to be back.
This is Soundcheck. That Soundcheck session came from our archives. You can hear lots more and check out our newly produced remote sessions
on our website, newsounds.org. Our technical director is Irene Trudell, our producer, Karen Havlick, and I'm John Schaefer.